And the thing is, more and more, we keep seeing like massive data requirements, 50 terabytes, 100 terabytes plus worth of data storage. And actually, when you get into the world of NetApp, buying 50 terabytes of storage is extraordinarily expensive. If you're buying storage every 3 to 5 years, when you start talking about bigger storage volumes, which we are now seeing from customers, the NetApp starts to get very expensive because your cash flow becomes very lumpy. 1 year, you'll be spending 250K to expand it. Next year, you might be spending like 350, 400K on expanding it again. Actually, you could probably spend 150, 200 on a hyperconverged platform and then effectively just pay as you go.
Hi, and welcome to the podcast, Experts in Polo Shirts. I'm here with Chris.
Hello.
And Dean.
Hello.
Today we'll be talking about hyperconverged infrastructure.
Could I have a really brief understanding of what hyperconverged is?
So, we used to buy servers and storage, and hyperconverged is a bunch of servers with storage in them all joined together in one cluster. So you don't need to buy a storage array and then buy a bunch of servers. You're buying servers that act as the storage and the compute together in one big cluster. So there's lots of benefits of that and some downsides, which we'll get into. Is that simple enough?
Yeah, I read something about it. It seemed to me like it was like the glue that held all the parts of the different aspects of what makes up your server together.
Yeah, right? So I suppose if you've got a VMware environment and you want to store your data, you're going to need to have a SAN, because that SAN is shared across all your different nodes that you've got in the cluster. And if you need more compute, you just buy more servers. By compute, I mean memory or CPU. And if you need more storage, you add more disks or buy more shelves or buy another SAN. But with hyperconverged, every box you add adds compute power, memory, and storage simultaneously. So you can kind of scale up and scale out in one move, which makes it nice and simple to scale your infrastructure.
Should go back to before hyperconverged.
Yeah, it's probably worth doing that as well.
So, starting from when I got into IT, not way before I did, because I'm not that old, was, I guess, your traditional kind of three-tier models or three separate parts. So your compute, your network, and your storage are all bought as three very separate components and then plumbed together to make work. And then we add, I guess, what would be converged. So, which was pretty much the same thing, your three components, but then all kind of sort of pre put together. Or like, what was the, like a FlexPod type thing where you're kind of, you're buying everything from the same vendor and it's all kind of pre-built conversion. Now it's hyper-converged is more software defined, so your network, compute, and storage are all kind of under the same, I guess, piece of tin, and the software that runs on top of it brings all your storage and your network together with your compute to
the hyper
side of it.
The FlexPod one's interesting because like that was, we used to just buy servers, and so we'd buy servers from vendor A, storage from vendor B, and then a network potentially from vendor C. And you'd have all those three components sat together, and often they'll just sort of look at each other and blame each other for the problem. So that's when FlexPod came out, and that was different vendors, but the one that I'm familiar with is Cisco and NetApp. And what they basically said is, if you buy these bundles and these SKUs together, we'll work as one support team to figure out your issues. But what it's not bespoke to every requirement. It's very much, it sets the bar very high for what you need to have to deliver the solution, which means that your upfront costs are very high. So hyperconverged is kind of like, as Dean was saying, it's like that kind of model where everything's supported, but it's under one vendor. Okay, I guess you might have your hardware vendor and your VMware behind the scenes, but that's really, the hardware's not doing that much in that scenario. But yeah, that's kind of a simple way of looking at it, I suppose.
Yeah, the hyperconverged software side of it is becoming, or is a lot more than it used to be, kind of vendor agnostic on the hardware side of things. So VMware's HCI offering of VMware vSAN and their networking piece runs on what advertisers ready nodes. So the hardware is audited and we know that it's compatible with their solution. But I think the best thing I have issues with both. I think hyperconverged was made to be simple, but I think it was, for me personally, I think it was made to be simple for simple things. Was if you're trying to do like VDS, like a Citrix environment, I think HCI is good for that because it's a simple thing sat on a simple process and you don't need kind of very specialist people, I think, as much to run HCI offerings as opposed to your traditional three kind of component builds. You would, back in the day, you'd probably have and bigger people who use them still probably do have dedicated people for the compute, dedicated people who are focused on storage, people who are networking people. Whereas HCI brings it all together, gives you a nice, easy GUI to use to control most of it, and yeah, it's a lot simpler to manage.
Yep. And I think on, like you mentioned then about the ready nodes and kind of how do you get started, I suppose, with hyperconverged, and that's the issue with hyperconverged is that vendors require, like, so you take for example like VMware, because that's really what I guess the bulk of my personal knowledge is about, is you've got to have a certain BIOS, you've got to have certain chipsets, you've got to have certain things that work together. And to protect the buyers and sellers, VMware made a bunch of pre-approved bundles of different sizes. So AF is their all-flash bundles. And then, did you call it the H1, H2? The H bundles, which are hybrid, but I don't think people really buy hybrid anymore. You just spinning disk and cache. So if you take their all-flash bundles, a lot of them tend to be NVMe cache drives and NVMe storage, which is the fastest that you can get from a storage perspective. And they're really giving sort of buyers the ability just to pick ready-made options where they know when it gets delivered, if they've bought 4 AF8 nodes and they join them together in a cluster, they're just going to get something that pretty much out of the box will work. That'll get them a VMware platform with X amount of storage, X amount of compute, and within a few days or whatever it might be of configuration time, they can have their platform up and running. So that's kind of made it more accessible for people, because previously you'd have to go and buy a piece of storage, go and buy a bit of tin to run the compute, and that sort of, like Dean saying, you need specialist people to manage that equipment.
I'm sure NetApp say 45 minutes.
For what?
From like powering on.
The thing with NetApp is they don't make it anymore. So it's clearly the 45-minute delivery process didn't shift any boxes.
I think that's where they started, and it gradually went downhill until it was non-existent.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's the SolidFire acquisition. Like, that's what drove them to get into the HCI space. I think they probably thought, well, hang on a second, we're getting market share eaten up by people building HCI stuff. But then quickly realized, I think they didn't really want to be in that, because it's effectively, it's a race to the bottom on tin, a lot of that, I think. Because they're not owning the software that they're shifting. So I think that's the issue with it.
Do you think they've pre-realized what we're here to talk about? Whether that's a fad?
So I think for a business like them, NetApp and other players, unless you own the software that runs on top of that platform, you are just a box shifter. But you think from a NetApp perspective, unless you do enough volume in that, and also think about how much dev effort you're going to have to put into developing that platform, that software. I think if they were just building like SolidFire components for vSAN platforms, which I don't know why they would do, I suppose that might be interesting. But the SolidFire platform. They pretty much, they basically took a load of its features and integrated it into the old Flash series. But HCI is interesting for us. I mean, like, the, because we're a NetApp house and have been since pretty much we started the business. And we do, we've had an offering for, we call Pod Hyperconverge for a while. And that's, I mean, we've been talking the last few days about what we do going forward, like whether we move away from servers and storage, which I think we'll always probably have a component of, whether actually when we're starting to build out our hosting platform, do we choose to build HCI? Do we choose to build more NetApp stuff? And the thing is, more and more, we keep seeing like massive data requirements, like 50 terabytes, 100 terabytes plus worth of data storage. And actually, when you get into the world of NetApp, buying 50 terabytes of storage is extraordinarily expensive. And the issue for us is that you think about from a CapEx, like, so as a service provider from a CapEx perspective, if you're buying storage every like 3 to 5 years, let's face it, most service providers want to own the kit, because that's really for us, like, where, you know, we're getting the lifetime value of the asset and it really able to sweat that as much as we can and get the most out of it. And we're also prepared to take the risk up front. Actually, when you start talking about bigger storage volumes, which we are now seeing from customers, actually, the NetApp starts to get very expensive, because your cash flow becomes very lumpy. You know, 1 year you'll be spending 250K to expand it. Next year, you need more storage. You might be spending like 350, 400K on expanding it again. And actually, you know, if you take, for example, let's say you spend £500,000 on a piece of storage, and that gets you 120 terabytes raw or 150 terabytes raw. Okay, you'll get dejump and compression. Maybe you'll squeeze, I don't know, 175, 200 terabytes out of that probably in a real world scenario. Actually, you could probably spend 150, 200 on a hyperconverged platform and then effectively just pay as you go. Because as a service provider, you've got your VMware pay-as-you-go licenses. And actually, you've got the platform in place and you can just scale that over time. And what it starts to happen is, as a service provider, your revenue starts to become linked to your costs. So obviously, as more customers take more storage, your VMware licensing charge is going to increase. But the compute has already got the disks in it. It's already ready to go, which can just be consumed over time. So the CapEx is a lot lower. Yes, operationally, there are a few challenges, which, like, we've been discussing. And one of those is, like, CPU and, like, PCPU and vCPU of contention, which is, you know, we shoot for either a 4 or 5 contention ratio on CPU cores. And anything more than that, and we tend to see, like, it's, like, CPU wait times increasing and performance suffers. So you sort of have this scenario where you don't want too many cores, because that's going to cause an issue where you probably can't cram that much memory productively onto one host and address it all. And actually, you might want less CPU cores. And also, there's an impact on Windows licensing, because licensing is on a per core basis. And the same applies in service provider or in the physical, like, typical customer world. So it's like, it's a bit of a fine balancing act, like finding the right core count to core speed. And then also right-sizing the actual disk groups and configuration and then the underlying network to make sure that you've got the performance that you need. So I guess it's, in some respects, it's nowhere near as simple. You have to sort of, you have to be a little bit better at guessing games, and you could end up with wastage. But like when we talk about it, we say, well, actually, even if there is wastage, if we're talking about potentially 40%, 50% less CapEx, and actually, if we fill it, we just buy one more server, bolt it on, turn it on, integrate into the HCI cluster, and we've instantly got more storage. Whereas with NetApp, you'll be spending, you know, you could be spending like 150, 250K on like an all-flash shelf. It's like, it's crazy money. If you think about it, you could potentially buy like, it might be £30,000-£35,000 for a server. It gets expensive seriously quick.
Is it better for a small businesses that is growing, or is it for big businesses as well?
I think it's for anyone. Like, have you seen the Edge stuff, the Edge cluster stuff they've been doing with it?
No.
There's some really cool stuff with that. So Edge Compute is like I think Walmart do this in the US, and there's probably some other brands like, I don't know, maybe like Chick-fil-A might have been mentioned on a case study or something, but basically they need compute locally in the store. So they have these tiny little boxes that are like Intel NUCs, like a little bit bigger than like Intel NUCs, like the size of like, I don't know, just a really small desktop PC, like a Mac Mini. It's basically like four Mac Minis joined together, and it forms a cluster that you can use for a couple of virtual servers. And they basically just deploy these like push button inside every single store. Because there's some stuff they just cut, they need the latency of it running in the store. And that, I mean, that could be like really low cost. Like we've got some Xeon D series options for like edge compute stuff, and it's super cheap. Like really, like by comparison to what you would pay for a proper SAN, like the Intel D series Supermicro edge builds that VMware is certified, are like super competitive. But yeah, I guess it's, I personally, I mean, the only issue is like to do HCI properly, in my opinion, a two node cluster is not really an option, which means that, yeah, there is a gate, and it's probably like you need to have enough infrastructure to justify it. And the sweet spot for HCI in terms of buying it is probably, it's probably like maybe 20 VMs is starts to become the sort of sweet spot. Maybe depends on your, like when we talk about in our platform, it's a bit different. I suppose if we're talking about a customer that's interested in what we do, it's normally going to be like 20 VMs and probably like 5+ terabytes of storage is where maybe like HCI might start to make sense, but not always. It really depends on the workload. I think if you're interested in like buying HCI and you're a small business, I think really to see the benefits from it, you probably need like still need a decent workload. Like I think you could get away with running like 5 VMs on a HCI cluster. I feel like it'd be overkill. Cause even on the, do they do an AF2 bundle?
I don't know, but you can get smaller.
Yeah.
Like HCI, not air quotes, isn't good for radio, but
yeah.
You can run like single node. It's still HCI.
Yeah.
Because then everything, you know, is bundled in, it's all software defined and whatnot. But the scale out for me for smaller businesses, and you said smaller businesses that are growing, is for me is one of the upsells of it because it's so much easier to scale. Whereas like, I remember having conversations at old places where you're trying to size something for your full 4 or 5 year infrastructure cycle. And it's just not, especially in like this business, might be a little bit easier in a business that's been going for a while and you can forecast your next few years. But that's the difficult part of the other non-hyper-converged is you're scaling and trying to get it right at first purchase, because adding stuff in is nowhere near as easy as like what Chris was saying, at just buying a node. You literally plug it in, you plug another 6 wires into it, and it's in, it's working. And it's, you said you could scale so much CPU memory and terabytes worth of data in within minutes.
Yeah, so I think it's interesting because like people coming through the ranks today, like they, like because they've sort of not grown up around infrastructure where like it was pizza box servers and storage and loads of crazy stuff going on. They're used to being abstracted, so they don't know what goes on like behind the curtain. And what that means is like people now, like if you consume HCI and you're of that ilk where like it's behind the curtain, you're not going to be bothered. Whereas, like for us, I like to know what's going on behind the scenes. Like, I want to like, how do I debug it? How do I troubleshoot it? How's it all put together? What's doing what? How do I know that something's not wrong? So for me, like HCI feels a little bit like a black hole. Like it's really hard to troubleshoot performance issues, and that's got a lot better than it was. Like much showing, like the newer versions, like Skyline Health and some like the reporting and stuff. But I think that for me is like what puts me off HCI is it feels like a little bit of a dark art. And yeah, you've got GSS support or whatever it might be, but actually you don't really know what's going on, and I never like that.
Yeah, the software bit that holds it all together is very like specialized, isn't it?
Yeah.
From the vendors. Like your back end command line stuff, which there is in the normal non hyper converged stuff.
But it's a bit more
open, if that's the word. Like you can see a lot more of it, whereas with the hyper converged stuff, it does feel like what you're saying, that the glue behind it is just hitting in its own little black hole that a specialist person that you can ring and get support from knows all sorts of magic, but isn't really general knowledge that you would your normal infrastructure or networking person would know how to go in and troubleshoot different things.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's a
yeah. I think the I actually think the right sizing HCI workloads is probably 7/10 of the battle when it comes to this stuff. Like getting, if you get the sizing right, I think really you're probably doing yourself a lot of favors, and that's probably why the AF bundles, people tend to stick with them, because like we were looking the other day, like obviously there's components you can change in an AF bundle. You can swap the disks to higher capacity, even though it has certain limits. You can. I think change the number of disks in a disk group, you can change the processors, change the RAM, but you've got to find that balance. Like, where is like too much? Where is right? What's the sweet spot? Like, for some workloads, is it better to have more hosts? And kind of, I think right sizing it probably stops like 75% of issues down the road. But I don't think the sizing tools are actually that good. And like the VMware sizing tool, like last time I used it, I just really didn't rate it. Because is that GitHub one, which I guess we can put in the show notes.
GitHub.
Yeah, there's a GitHub. Someone's basically built a calculator for doing vSAN sizing, which is really cool. So we'll put a link in the show notes for that. But yeah, it's. I think like with the advent of like VxRail, and I don't like it, dirty word, Nutanix, but.
Insert applause here.
Dean's. I need to be clear on this. Are you a Nutanix fanboy?
Right. I would not purchase Nutanix.
Right.
But if somebody else bought it for me,
you would definitely play with it.
I liked it. Yeah. I think it was really good at what it was supposed to do. Yeah. And I think everything they are doing that I'm aware of, they are doing very well. But they seem to be very kind of embedded in that HCI world.
Yeah.
Whereas if it's not a fad, right? It has its areas, and traditional 3-component infrastructure builds still has its place in its areas where it's better. Yeah, I think they are just doing very well at the HCI piece of what they're.
Yeah, I think the Nutanix bit is the support. So if you're going with Acropolis, I guess you've got a bit of a saving there on the licensing for VMware. It's probably substantial. They can then shift more tin with the overlay of the support bit, and that's going to be where they make their money. And I know from speaking to people, like the Nutanix support is really, really good. I guess for us on the service provider space, like we'll do Intel hardware and VMware hyperconverged over the top. Just because it's like for us, like that Intel hardware is like almost like its rawest form. Like most servers you buy are going to have Intel CPUs, possibly Intel motherboards, Intel NVMe drives. We're kind of like buying it in like its almost rawest form and attaching the software to it and kind of making it work ourselves, as opposed to relying on Nutanix to bring it all together. But if you're an enterprise and you want to manage your infrastructure, but you want that support, I guess Nutanix is probably not too bad of a shout. Particularly the Acropolis, providing the software that you've got all works with that hypervisor.
Yeah. We stuck with VMware on top of Nutanix, which was, I guess, against the cost model. Instead of you, they throw in again an air quotes free hypervisor, but it's not free. It's like buying a box of cereal just for the toy.
Yeah, it feels a bit half baked to me, that hypervisor.
Yeah, it was good. It did everything. We ran AHV for the Citrix environment. Yeah. Worked really well. But yeah, I'd be in no rush to move away from using VMware as the hypervisor.
It's weird though, because is that still with Nutanix abstracting the disk through the VMs that it builds that just talk to the underlying components? So is it, you have like some sort of worker VM on each host that does the abstraction piece of the underlying disks?
There's a controller virtual machine on each host.
Yeah, so I guess really it's probably, the technology is probably very, very similar. They probably won't like us saying this, but the technology is probably very similar to exactly how vSAN works. Because I suppose on vSAN, it probably is some form of container or process that is converting those disks into one big array.
Yeah, and then they've got Prism that kind of sits over the top of it all, which is, I guess, their vCenter. And then Prism Pro can manage multiple Prism elements. But Prism element would be a cluster. Prism Pro will manage multiple Prism element clusters. Yeah. All your visibility of monitoring performance, all that sort of stuff, and the same type of... Didn't enjoy the GUI as much as vCenter, but
it
was good. But the software piece is the downfall it's advertised as you're saving money on your VMware licensing, but yes, you are, but you're just chucking it somewhere else. You're giving them for the Acropolis, and the Prism side of things is costy.
Yeah. Yeah, it's for us, I really like the rawness of like buying the hardware and building it all, sticking put VMware over the top of it, and you know exactly what you're getting. Whilst there's definitely some magic going on, it's a lot better than it was in terms of to see what's actually taking place. But I guess we're trying to skill our team up in knowing that, as opposed to relying on like GSS for it.
Yeah, I think the VMware HCI piece as well is easier to adopt because we've come from just using ESX.
Yeah, yeah.
Using vCenter to manage ESX, then you might move somewhere where people are using vSAN and that gets put into your knowledge. Then obviously I've come here where NSX is quickly being introduced to what I'm working with and loving that side of it. Whereas Nutanix, so we're talking about that. I'm talking about the people side of things. We can go out and find 9 out of 10 infrastructure people who will have VMware or some sort of VMware knowledge.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas Nutanix is like probably gold dust in comparison.
Do you think it's fair to say that if you've got Nutanix, you're more likely to rely on the vendor support piece more because you might be buying it because you've got that skills gap?
If you're new and you've come straight into that, I guess like you said, the IT youth of today, if they might, today's generation, if they come into a job where there's already Nutanix, they're probably going to learn very little because it's a very well built and easy to use GUI. Anything goes wrong under that GUI, you don't know anything until you pick up the phone, ring support, and you watch them do their magic.
Yeah.
But it's not something you would dig into to figure out yourself. Whereas, the VMware, that's been gradually built up to become a HCI kind of.
And where do you think things like VxRail will go in the market? I mean, because the other thing is there's storage spaces as well that we haven't even spoke about. I mean, I'm not. I let you lead on the VxRail one, but I like the storage spaces. My experience with that has been really poor. But I know that there's quite wide adoption of it because, of course, it comes as part of your license. But like when we've played with that before, granted not in a production setting, I really wasn't like pleased with it. And I've had a bad history with Hyper-V and it going wrong. And for me, the VMware has been like super stable for us. We've been really fortunate with it. And I suppose that's the reason why it's probably used by the majority of, you know, top earning companies in the world. But like the VxRail piece, when we spoke about this as well yesterday, like it's interesting, like the VxRail components, but like, where do you think that goes?
Depends on the VMware Dell relationship, doesn't it? And how, because I don't know whether that started off really well, didn't it? And they put everything together and it hangs together well, but it doesn't seem to be. There's, I'm sure there's rumors already of that potentially coming to an end.
I suppose it goes a bit down the old NetApp route, doesn't it? Like that's the risk there with VxRail, is that actually, if you separate the two and you're no longer the person that owns the software that runs on top of it, is it attractive to build the other components to make deploying the boxes easy with the dev team and maintaining it and integrating it in all the new releases? The answer is probably no. You'd have to be doing some serious volume of it for it to make sense about.
Yeah, I think they're trying to do like, so obviously Nutanix is the same thing. You buy Nutanix, you buy their hardware, which is it Supermicro stuff that they brand as Nutanix stuff.
Maybe Dell, I'm not sure.
Which is kind of the same, but VxRail for me feels a bit more like the next level of hyper-converged, but without it being the next level. And I'm going to try and make that sound, I'm going to try and make sense of what I've just said. It's multiple vendors, although owned by the same kind of corporation these days, trying to put together a hyper-converged offering. Whereas at the end of the day, it's no different to what we'd go out and buy if we bought all Intel stuff. It just happens to be all Dell stuff.
Yeah.
And they're off there. They can offer it as a whole solution. And a VxRail comes in a lovely looking rack.
Yeah.
By the way, a cabinet with a lovely logo on.
Click a few buttons, off you go.
Yeah. So it all comes like pre. I think, sure, you can get them to like pre knock it up for you. And it literally, you don't see it until it's a working cabinet. But yeah, it just feels like they're just offering what we could go out and do with any hardware.
Yeah, and like that's what, for me, I struggle to see that gap in terms of the commercials, because like we've got people who know what goes on behind the curtain, and we look at it and go, hang on a second, like, we can't justify spending that much more, because all that's going to do is increase the cost to our customer. Actually, we might as well have the really raw version and just go and do our bit and do it ourselves, because we've got the expertise. But I guess if you don't, that's where stuff like that is really useful.
Yeah, I don't know if part of the VxRail thing as well is like, they, from when I went through the whole review of that piece as a competitor, I guess, to Nutanix when I was looking at it.
Yeah.
They were very overselling on the fact that, it's all from one place. But that's pretty much every, I know, with traditional what we would be doing, buying Intel and VMware, but like you said earlier, the hardware piece doesn't really, a physical piece of hardware might die, but John from down the road is going to bring us a new one in 4 hours.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a very small piece of it, but that seemed to be a big thing for them, that it was like, we're kind of Toys R Us all under one roof kind of thing, where it's just not a big enough thing for me to sway towards that because of that particular piece. The best piece of it was it's the VMware bit that you get anyway, like we were talking about yesterday with the licensing. If you're looking at different offerings of, obviously at the time I was comparing Citrix versus Workspace ONE, so VMware's version of Citrix VDI, and that whole licensing piece makes it a bit more attractive, a lot more attractive actually, I personally think. But
yeah,
the hardware side of things is like a very, well, like you were saying, you've got it, we're looking at getting it right in terms of the amount of CPU. Do we go for 4 hosts versus 5 hosts, and maybe it's putting in less memory in each, but then spreading this, what would be the same amount over 5 hosts instead of 4. Getting that piece right to begin with is obviously can be key for when you're scaling later on. But apart from that, it's it's a very, it's like 5% of your overall infrastructure, and it's the bit that the HCI kind of software defined bit that sits on top of the physical that makes it magic.
Yeah.
So other than Dell, is can you see anybody in the future like working to solve this particular problem? Where are the solutions coming from?
I don't think there is much of a problem, to be honest with you. I think, like I said before, I think it just fits into certain places better than traditional, let's call it. And traditional will fit into other areas better than hyperconverged. It's fully based on what you want to do and where you want to go with. And what the underlying, like if you go down to application level, there's areas or specifics where hyperconverged might not be the right option. And a traditional three component build would be better. Yeah. But yeah, I don't see there being an issue. I think they're both doing amongst all the top vendors that we use and have used in the past, they're all doing and carrying on doing what we want them to be doing.
Yeah, like you say, the big storage and servers, it has its place and will continue to do so probably forever. And then the I would say the small caveat to that actually, which is that the big storage now, we're seeing a lot of vendors do storage as a service. So here's a box, this is your monthly price for that storage. And when you've gone over this allocation, you can start paying per gigabyte and we'll just send you a shelf. So turning that on-premise storage into an OPEX cost that you consume. Of course, at a premium over and above just buying it and owning it, but the advantage that you've got flexibility on the storage. Yeah, the HCI, I think, yeah, it's where do you really go from X? When we're at NVMe disks, we're at latest generation of processors.
That's what I was just about to say. It'd be nice to, so as a, like a kind of a side thing to your question, I'm intrigued about, because Nutanix came out of nowhere, I guess, and kind of took the lead in the HCI world and ran with it and are probably still up there. And we're new from the get-go. What is the next step? What can somebody do? Is it going to be a current player in the market that comes up with something that is either going to make HCI better, or do we go to what's the next one after Hyper?
Yeah, who knows?
Because you've got compute, storage, and networking. There's nothing else really to add in. They're the three main components. I'm not creative enough, and I can't think of a fourth component that needs to be added in.
Will we enter the quantum realm? Because yeah. We see a lot about quantum computing, and I don't know anything about it. But maybe that's the next. Is that the next move? Is it? We find a way to make things may more energy efficient than they currently are. I really don't like. I see. Like we've looked at this about the concept of using liquid-based cooling to like lower power consumption. But the reality is, like, to fit that hardware in the data center, it's bespoke. Like a data center is not going to give up floor space and build custom cooling configurations for liquid cooling unless the whole facility is fitted out from day one to do liquid cooling. But the thing is, that doesn't change the technology that the underlying server hardware. It just increases the density that providers can run at or customers can install equipment at. So that might let us have way, way, way more powerful servers, because at the end of the day, like the limitations of like what you can put in a cabinet currently in colocation is so many kilowatts worth of rating, because they have to cool the thing. And actually, if they can cool more by having liquid-based cooling where they actually immerse the servers in like an oil, then, but it's still going to be servers and storage. That's not going to change. And I'm not sure where that will go, really. I guess I'll have to wait and see. Stay tuned for episode 1001.
Thank you both for joining me, or me joining you, I think it would be more accurate for this one.
Did you peek behind the curtain and realize that you didn't like what was going on and just put it back?
There was a lot of stuff there that was straight over my head. But yeah, it was,
you just read the three lines from Wikipedia about what hyperconverged infrastructure was, and
the first four lines.
Thought you had it, yeah.
Four.
But yeah, thanks for informing me a little bit. Did pick up a little bit.
So we just need you to go into the comments section, give us a rating, and leave a comment. It does help the podcast out. Like, comment, subscribe.